This is the Chasing Tomorrow podcast with Joe Gagnon. We bring you captivating conversations that will inspire all of us to go after our own version of a high-performance life. Welcome to the Chasing Tomorrow podcast. It's the Joe and Sean show. Of course, two of us love hanging out. All we do is like to talk, and our prep is always more fun almost sometimes than the podcast, but a lot going on in our lives. But Sean said to me, hey, I think I need to know a little more about you, because as much as we've spent time on the trail and in the gym podcasts, there's still a depth that you want to go into. So I said, sure, you could ask me anything, Sean. I'm here for you, my friend. What do you want to talk about?
I want to talk about you, Joe.
Oh, boy.
I know, right? No, it was, I'll tell you, the high performance coach, Bo, that's going to come with us to run across Joshua Tree. I said, Bo, Joe would love to have you on the podcast. And he was, yeah, tell me about this guy. I said, this. He goes, what? I need to interview him. And that's kind of how I felt. I was like, you're a very curious, really good listener. You're always making other people feel important. I think I would say never, ever lose that if my opinion matters. But with that being said, I don't think we give you enough credit. I don't think we highlight you enough sometimes. And maybe some of the people who have been listening or are just stumbling across this could learn a lot from you. I know I sure have. That's one of the things. I think mutual kind of like learning respect is what kindles like friendships. And yeah, I wanna dig in, Joe, to some questions that I'm selfishly curious about.
All right. I'm here for you, Sean. Yeah, anything. Let's go.
Yeah. So, I mean, first, give me, we'll go through this part quick unless there's any points you really want to hit on, but give me the from Joe to kind of, from Joe being born to graduating college, kind of becoming a man in your first career. Yeah.
Like if we went, that's, we'll say Joe 1.0, then 2.0, then 3.0. So yes. I think the 1.0 was a pretty simple start, just a kid growing up in a nice family. We had a high influence of the Italian tradition because my grandmother lived with us for 17 years and she was from Italy. So it was about Sunday dinners and going to school and living a modest life. There were no like going out on Friday nights or any of that kind of stuff. And it was playing ball in the street, whether that be football, hockey, baseball. It was like every time. And then dad would whistle and you'd come in for dinner at 5 o'clock and you'd do your homework. And so it's pretty straight down the middle. As everyone knows, if you ever read my book or anything, I was a really small kid and we were a pretty low key family. And so I never really fit in well to the sort of emerging community of people who got to puberty sooner and all that. But I started working when I was 14, took a job every year, tried to make some money, found that all that was valued in high school wasn't anything that I had. So I didn't have blonde hair. I did have blue eyes, still do, but I didn't have big muscles. Tried out for the track team, but I found the whole gym experience to be a little intimidating, to say the least. And maybe today we might even use different words. But so I hid from everything. I studied and that was it. Played guitar at church. I was just like a kid who did not much. And I was actually going to go into the military out of high school. But for a lot of reasons that I had no control over, I lost my presidential nomination and was then ended up thrust into school in the Bronx, Fordham. Loved it, had great 4 years, sort of started to come into my own and started to realize that what I really loved was discourse. I loved talking to people. I loved the argument. I was the Chief Justice of the Student Court. I was on the debate team. I wanted to engage in smart people having smart discussions and learning from that. And I did the simple things. You played softball or you played volleyball, but there was no like sporting kid in me. And all I was trying to do was to graduate college and get a job. That was it. And I did. It was not auspicious. It was $14,000 a year. So after college and having borrowed a whole bunch of money to get through, it didn't seem right or just, but it was okay. It was a start. And Sean, as you and I talk all the time, all these moments of significance are either the beginning of the end, how you think about them. And so it was the beginning of the mindset thing, which is just happy to have a job. But 2 weeks into my job, it's so funny. My car was stolen. My girlfriend broke up with me. I had to move back in the basement to my parents' house because I couldn't afford anything. I was like, oh boy, here we go. But as the story goes, it got better from there.
We were on trail when you told me the story about your first job, the car getting stolen, all that. That was a tough time. But let's actually talk about that. So whether it's that example or not, is that one of the lower points for you, would you say?
I think that was I was still young, so I don't know that I made it tragic low point, but I knew I needed to escape it. Like I knew that I needed to dream of something. So I started thinking about what bold move could I take? I said, oh, I should get an MBA. And so I applied to schools, none in the United States, only outside the US. And I got into the Australian Graduate School of Management. I was so excited I could go to get my MBA in Australia. This would be the greatest thing ever, right? 22-year-old. Except that it was really weird. They only had two requirements. One, you had enough money to fly there and back. Number two, you could pay for your housing, but school was free. So this is a great deal. Except when I started looking into what it cost to fly on a plane, I couldn't afford the plane ticket. And so then I asked my parents, would they give me the money? And they said, we don't have the money to give you. And so I had to defer my admissions for a year. And I tried to save to get the money for this $5,000 airplane ticket, because a long time ago, it wasn't $150 to do that. And couldn't save the money again. So I think that was a bit of a low point, because I had really dreamed of the escape, going to the other side of the world and finding myself somewhere else. And so then I had to be, oh boy, what am I going to do now? Because yeah, the low was sort of funny, but then it got real. I was, I don't know if I like this sort of thing that I'm doing. I'm not making much money. I'm sort of like a bit of a nobody. So what the heck? What are you going to do now? And so I think that it was the second step down on that journey. You still think, okay, I'll make it, but no idea how.
Yeah, I understand. So that the reason I was digging in there, that low point, how do you view it now? Was it one of the more valuable experiences, invaluable experiences? Do you regret it, or are you so happy you went through it because you learned something?
Yeah, I think that, well, it's easy now. I think that every one of those steps were defining of this resilient character that I believe that I've built. It didn't matter if you like knocked me down. I was going to get back up. I wasn't going to quit. I didn't find it okay. I mean, it continued to develop. It wasn't obvious how that was going to happen. But in that job, I took a programming class because I had to learn something. And then someone saw me as a good programmer and said, hey, we need to hire you. And I moved into IT. And I was, oh, wow, how'd that happen? And then I kept noticing that the more effort I put in, the better the return I got, people noticed. And so it was a little bit like I had to be a fighter to get attention. But when I put that effort in, I got a return. So I kept sort of parlaying that, like putting more chips down on the table, which were my time and my commitment to my own personal excellence and showing up. And I think, Sean, the thing that I really learned early on was that people count on you if you deliver for them, and they're going to keep asking you. And so every time I delivered, they said, oh, you want to try this? You want to do that? And you just kept getting more opportunity. I never had to ask for anything. All I had to do was do something they asked better than they expected, faster, sooner, easier, made their life easy. Then people want you around. And oh, I'm starting to sort of figure this game out a little bit. Raise your hand, volunteer, say yes, make it easy for someone, then they want you around.
I like how simple you just made that of like the... A lot of times I think people try to sell things versus just doing. I learned that a while ago was starting my business. If I can leave 10% open capacity to do things for non-clients or do things before clients upgrade their work with me, it's just like, yep, you need that. We're just going to start doing it. It's like you do it once and they'll just come right back to you and say, cool, we like that. Let's work together on that. I was looking when you said like faster, you know, faster, easier. You said one other.
Yeah, better than they would expect.
Better. It started making me think, I think there's only three resources in the world. I think there's time, money / commodities, and energy. And I was trying to think if that, like faster, that's time. Sooner is time. Better. Like I was just, or easier sure. is energy. Better could maybe relate to like money. I was thinking about that because almost I always think about those three resources we have from like how I'm going to spend my resources. But in fact, like it could be a way to think about like how to give people value, right? You can only get, because I really think those are the only three ways you give people value. So how can I give someone time, money, and energy back, or reduce their output of time, money, and energy?
Yeah, I think this is selling is never about selling. It's about people buying, right? And buying happens all the time. It happens in relationships. It happens in work. It happens in business and in life in general. And why people buy is that it makes their life better. Like if you figure that out, how I make your life better, how I make anyone else's life better, you sort of guarantee yourself a seat at the table if that's what you're doing. It's when you're taking that someone then has to do this comparison between whether I want that or not relative to something else. But if all the situation is they're getting, then wow, my gosh, like who doesn't want that, right? The word accretive builds on top of, makes it better for them. And the simple saying, right, I got it. Learn how to do that, right? I got it. You have so much else to do. I got this one for you. That the, you know what that feels like? Us, like you feel lifted up when that happens. These are like these symbiosis. They just seem so obvious, but we seem to miss the point every once in a while that this life is not that complicated. Maybe when you get knocked down and you pick yourself back up, that's what you figure out.
Yeah. So it's funny, as we're both writing books right now. And I'm deep in it, Joe. So this is relating to a lot of it. But one of the things that I talk about is simple but not easy. And I think that's what you're talking about here, where it's simple to like keep that concept, but it's definitely not easy to. It's simple to understand that, hey, we need to, like selling for an example, we need to make it feel like the person's getting something, not like they're spending something, right? But it can be challenging to manage the dynamic of the conversation, make sure you're getting all your information across. And I wonder if it's just a challenging thing to do, or I have another chapter all about perspective in my book. And I personally think perspective is the one thing that steals people's happiness, right? So for example, you run 1UP. You're trying to change the healthcare situation, make a major impact on the healthcare that people receive. It probably doesn't feel like that is what you're doing when you're like filling out an Excel sheet. It's very far from it. So how can you work in the weeds and maintain this 30,000 foot vantage point of like my long-term mission, what we're doing over the next 10 years right now in the moment while I'm sending emails, doing Excel sheets? That's something that I think comes with like mindfulness practice. And I've been working pretty hard at trying to balance that. How do I always think about that mission, you know? But sometimes easier for me with like physical training because it's just more simple. Yeah. Hey, I have a goal. I need to run an ultra marathon. That's why I'm running every day, because it's kind of like less complicated, less variables, and something maybe bigger.
Yeah, but so you're talking about clarity, and it takes time to parse that. We create the noise ourselves, but we can create clarity pretty quickly. You can create, I don't think you need to have that many goals to have a full life. It just has to be really clear. So back to like 1.0, 2.0, 3.0. Like in that first 1.0, you're sort of establishing yourself as a person, right? You're getting through sort of the adolescence and you're trying to work into where we have our prefrontal cortex developed and we're no longer reptilian and only just amygdala driven, you know. And in the second phase, we're establishing ourselves in the community, whether that's family, work, relationships. And then the third phase, we're establishing ourselves as sort of the giver, the person delivering back all that we learned throughout. And so in each of those phases, you might have different clarity on what you're trying to set out to do. Like in the second phase, maybe someone has a family and they say, look, what my goal is to be able to pay for my kids to go to college. Or maybe my goal is to create a career foundation for me. But if you keep it to two or three really core, it's really not that hard to then on a daily basis, keep yourself on track. What happens is that we let a lot of noise get in the way, the noise of others. Someone says, oh, Sean, you should go do this. And you're like, yeah, no. See, one of the things I'm always impressed with, Sean, is you say no as much as you say yes, which is very powerful. Not no in a negative way, just that doesn't fit to my clear goals. The second would be that you don't just get distracted because some other noise came along, like some car drove by, so to speak, and you then all of a sudden, oh, turn your head. I often think that I test myself. I lived and worked in New York City for a long time, and someone bangs into you as you walk down the street. This is completely innocuous, and the first thing you do is you turn around. No, just control the system, whether it's aggressive or not. This is absolutely just happening, and it's not real. And so if you practice all of that around clarity every day, then it gets easier to hold to the goals because everything else doesn't fit. And then it's really like decisions you make. Like someone says to you, well, Sean, don't you miss having a drink? And you're like, if I missed it, then I would do it because I don't miss it. I think it's actually that complete zero and a one. And then a lot really works in your favor. So when you say in that middle ground, remember we talked about that at Bighorn, the zero is zero. That was an early lesson I learned, was that that's a way easier way to manage the system, because that's what you're doing, right? You're managing yourself and all this energy and all of your time. And then what do you want to do with that? Best systems, right, are optimized for what they were designed to do. And they can pump out, right, high volume, exactly what it said it's supposed to do. And then it can be better quality over time.
Hey guys, Joe Gagnon, host of the Chasing Tomorrow podcast, and this episode is brought to you by 1UP Health. 1UP Health is a modern cloud data and interoperability platform that makes it easy to acquire, store, and share data between payers, providers, and patients. I hope you enjoy the episode.
So I think the same concepts come through in our lives. And maybe just one more point, like the other simplicity that we both know this, outcomes matter. What outcome do I want? Which then connects to my goals and my simplicity around this. But sometimes it feels like a trade-off, but actually we know this language, discipline creates freedom. If you can get through and break through on that, then all of a sudden it never feels like a constraint. It actually feels like an enabler. That's what I think about all the time.
Discipline creating freedom. That's something that I think about a lot too. This actually came from me connecting with my dad, right? My dad's very, very against anything constraining him, any commitment, any time, like committing to any time, committing to any action. He thinks that creates massive tension. And he's, don't you just want to like hang out or something, right? Or he says, you're always quote unquote doing something. My like goal in life is to always be being, would be a good word, using my time wisely, right? Using my time wisely can be sitting on the couch with my family, right? That I don't need to be writing a business plan, sending emails, but I do need to be using my time wisely. Usually, in my opinion, that means predetermined. Sometimes absolutely can be spontaneous, go with the flow, more feel it out. But that is one of the things that like I kind of have been really trying to embody is the fact that like discipline creates freedom. I even think about like my workouts. When I tell myself, so I give myself 3 hours from the time my alarm goes off to the time like I'm awake, brush my teeth, do a little like breath work, get my water in, get my workout in, come back, shower, make breakfast, do anything I'm going to do for myself, and then open the laptop and start working. That's 3 hours. Mm-hmm. I realize when I stick to that, it feels like I've given myself a vacation. I have 3 hours to just do all the stuff I love to do for myself. Otherwise, like when I don't give myself that, I'm running off this random schedule. I'm always, all right, I got to work through this set. I got to get to the next set. I got to get done with my workout. I got to get home, shower, and keep it like running because I don't even have anything to stick to. And if versus, oh, I have this amount of time, I'm going to plan an appropriate amount of stuff to use it fully, but not too much. So I can really work out quality, like make a breakfast, eat it, not in front of my laptop. It's very, very interesting, this discipline piece. I think people shy away from it. They might be scared. And sometimes I think the being scared of discipline comes down to the clarity thing that we spoke about in the beginning.
Yeah, I think that this word intention, being intentional, is what you were describing, even about sitting on the couch. I just think that, well, so if we went and said, do you have time and energy and how do you use those in a day? When you have that schedule, those are maximized. Your time and your energy are maximized. You're not losing any of the 100% that you start with. When you have a lot of other interruptions, now you're using energy and time, not against your intention. And that's when you get frustrated because now we're out of balance because you still know what you need to accomplish. And so this discipline creates freedom, this simplicity, like the one that really people struggle with that I do 2/3 of the day is if you had a problem eating and you wanted to solve this problem, there's no diet in the world. This is just one simple thing you do. You design the best breakfast, the best lunch, and the best dinner, and you eat the same thing every day. And your health will improve, diet improves, everything improves because this simplicity that you delivered through that. No energy loss. Go to the store, you buy the exact same thing, you make it, you're satisfied, it's just fuel, that's all there is. And when you try and figure out 21 meals in the week and trying to add up your macros and you're trying to figure out how many calories, my God, that's a lot of effort. So let's say that took 10% of your time to figure that out. 3%, like there's no return on that at all. And if you're outcome focused or you want to get something done, this is where this discipline creates the freedom, because I got time back from my disciplines. I know what I'm programmed to do. You have your 3 hours. I love that. It's absolutely beautiful. I think that is the best way for you to start your day, because effort and time are optimized. And you know this because you feel it. When you don't do it, you don't feel good. And so this is the key. If you think about peak performance, like everyone indexes Sean to 100. Don't care what the 100 is. That is the maximum you have on everything you do. And the question is, how close do you get to 100 on any of the elements of that on a daily basis? In the days when you get close to 100, which is optimizing on time and energy, the commodity stuff aside, it really goes well. It really goes well. And so it's the discipline that we all should work on and figure out whether the variability of your 3 meals to 21 meals is worth it. And did you get enough return? Now, you might say, I do, because look, I'm a foodie and I want to go eat here and I want to experience that there. And I want to, it's costing you something to do that. And you need to just reconcile that.
Yeah. First of all, I was starting to laugh because I realized I'm the worst interviewer ever, because we went away from Joe's story and just plunged in. And I was, that's par for the course. So that's good. To keep that going, though, I completely agree with you. And what I heard was that everything has a, I'm trying to think of the right word. Everything has just like there's a give and take to everything, right? Like when you do something, there is a cost. The cost could be minuscule, cost could be big, but it's, I actually, me and Emma talk about this a lot. Like we love cooking meals together and let's try a new recipe. And I think that's completely different than what you're talking about. That becomes a activity to bond our relationship. It's not my lunch today was I just slapped some like a sandwich together and ate it because that was just it's what I need for the diet. Quick, easy, efficient. It's different than an activity. But there are sometimes me and Emma are maybe running around a little busy. I say, hey, like this week, my goal with all of my meals is health and efficiency.
Yeah. Right?
Like if that means we make 10 cups of rice, 20 chicken breasts and 20 things of broccoli, and that's just what we eat, that's fine. And you know, it's funny because again, it does come back to that like intention and just understanding the cost to it. Because if I'm like working on my business and there's a critical week where I need to do this, this, and this, I'm also training for a marathon and do this, 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 and then sleep 8 hours, you know, that's going to cover about a whole week, right? And it's at that point, making like an extra special like meal probably isn't worth the additional energy when we're working on these like big long-term projects. And I don't think you're telling people not focus on meals, like meals was the example. It's more along the lines of, hey, understand that everything has like a cost to it.
Yeah. There's a purpose. Look, at the end of the day, you can turn food into fuel, which is what you need. You can make it an experience. There can be traditions. There can be connections that come from that. But what we can't do is have randomness and expect that an outcome is going to be what we predict. It's just not happening. And if you use up a lot of energy not pointed towards the goal, then you can't expect to achieve the goal. That's not judgmental, by the way, at all. We should all get our free choice to do what we want. The only point is, if you want something, then you have to design for that. And when you have a fixed amount of time, 24 hours in a day, 168 hours in a week, there is a fixed amount of energy, right? Because once we get to exhaustion, the only way to replenish that is through sleep. So there are these systems that we're working inside of. And if you want to use them to your advantage, you do, and you accomplish your goals. That's it. It's not really that complicated. The key is that without the clarity and the understanding, then we don't know exactly what we get at the end of that journey. That's what I found out through this sort of process of trial and error myself, and the willingness to simplify in some places and so call it complicated in others. Like if I ate peanut butter and jelly every day for 5 years for lunch, and I worked and ate at my desk because I got that hour back, like that was valuable if I wanted to go train back in the gym that night. If I went out for lunch for an hour, then I did not get in the pool or get on the bike after work when I was doing Ironman. And so that mattered. Like, just eat that same thing. Power bar, peanut butter and jelly sandwich, broccoli, water every day for lunch. I got an hour sitting at my desk, and then I got an hour of training. So I just think that that might be not be the trade-off someone wants to make. But if you make that goal set, I want to do Ironman, then I needed that extra 5 hours in the week. I had to bring it from somewhere because there's only 168 hours. And you're right. You sleep, you work, you have other obligations. I have the spreadsheet in my book and I make people fill it out. Do you feel good about how you use your 168 hours? You said it before. It's essentially your currency. And so usually people are not happy with how they use their time when they look at it in that sort of more atomic level. But this is all a good journey and a learning experience. And I'm still learning how to do it myself. Even as much as I think I'm disciplined, there are days where, to do better. So I'm still working on it.
It's really, really true. And I think what we'll have to talk about on the next episode is going to be jumping into exactly how you distill it down. Because what I find is for me, it's really easy to make the plan. And it's really easy to stick to certain pieces of the plan. But there are areas where I go awry. And that's something I'm working on for sure.
Yeah. And we can tease that out on the next one. I'll just sort of we'll set the marker for it. I think that this is all about sort of the noise of the system that we live inside of, and what do you do with that noise? And can you train yourself like the Navy SEALs do, right? They train themselves to be comfortable while they're uncomfortable, to not take the noise, as they say, signal through noise, right? And noise we can define. We'll talk about that later. It's your friends, it's work, it's the environment, it's the news, it's all the stuff that seeps in if we're not careful. So we let it in the right way. And then the last thing is the agreement. Once you can create agreements with the other counterparties to your life, life gets better. When you don't have an agreement to the counterparties, and that's my sort of stupid language for friends, family, partners, and all of that, or coworkers. If you can do that, then you got a lot of gift back and a lot of time back and a lot of energy back. And I guess we'll leave it there. I'm always struck by, we talk about this generational arc that we're creating between the two of us, that these different stages of our lives, how much common thinking we can have, and how much we can learn from each other, and how committed we can be towards sort of helping each other achieve their best version of themselves. And so I love these conversations, Sean. Thanks for doing this with me.
Yeah, I really love them too, Joe. I really can't tell you how much I appreciate it. And it feels like one long string. One thing I will say is I started my podcast because I felt like I wanted to have an excuse to have conversations with people that I wanted to. And I've never had this experience of just having to be a part of a recurring part of a podcast over and over. And you and me said in the beginning, we said, it might get dull. Let's be open to changing it. From my end, it hasn't felt that way at all. So I appreciate it.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Agreed. Thank you so much, Joe.
You're welcome, Sean. Have a great one.
Thanks.